Colonel Hayne, Reel Number 6. What did a demonstration platoon do?
Well, it was a highly trained platoon, and it was there to demonstrate to troops who had not had the experience of war the discipline. Was a great thing. I mean, we trained like guardsmen as far as the drill was concerned, but then on the battle side, you showed them how you should do things and how you should use your weapons. I mean, as far as your mortars and your bombs and your rifle was concerned, I mean, every one of those fellows that I had in my demonstration platoon could get off between 20 and 25 aimed shot in a minute. And some of them get a little more aimed shots, not just random ones. Hmm? And it was that sort of thing. And with of course, the Americans were extremely late in coming into the war. I don't know when they actually declared war against the Germans, but we didn't see any Americans until about April 1918, I believe it was. And I was sent with one of these demonstration platoons to try and help them. We were behind the lines, mind you. I mean, we were around about Saint-Omer way, 20 miles behind the lines, possibly. And, as I say, my job was to demonstrate. They were... We didn't realise how much we knew until we met them. It was really an eye-opener. Of course, We finished up by learning their rifle drill and demonstrating to them how they should do it. But that's only by the way. And we had quite a happy time with them, but it was a very difficult time because they didn't resent your presence, but they didn't seem to want to learn. They were much keen on taking typewriters and things in the line and doing this and having all their chits correct. I had some very amusing experiences with them. I was lecturing to a whole battalion of New York chaps one day, and I noticed that there must have been west past 700 or 800. I was shouting my guts out. I noticed that about half of them were asleep, and the rest were playing cards. They were doing anything except listen to me. So I thought, well, I ought to make some sort of a protest about this. So I got hold of the CO after the show, and I said, well, look here. I said, do you want me to do this or don't you? And he was a friendly sort of chap. He said, well, that's all right, guy, or whatever he called me. He said, but you've got to realise that 60% of these guys don't speak English. I said, oh. I was with the Texan division afterwards, and they were a very different kettle of fish. They were an awful nice bunch. But I hope they learned in the long run. But of course, one's quite unfair about that, because wars and battles and soldiering is only learnt by experience, and we just didn't realise how much experience we had got. I mean, you almost knew when to lie flat on the ground, because the show was coming bang at you. You almost had a sixth sense after a time. It's self-preservation, of course. That is the first thing a human being has, and when we all had it none of us wanted to be killed, anything like it, and we did our best not to be killed. Well, I think that's about... I don't know what else you want to talk to me about.
There's several other questions I'd like to ask. When you went home on leave, did you feel that the people in this country had much idea?
No. None whatsoever.
They didn't know about the murder?
None whatsoever. And I'm sorry to say, most of them, a lot of them, didn't want to know. Mm. Now, you often... It was a terrible feeling. You saw business as usual stuck up all over the place, and you knew it was business as usual with 1,000% more profit. Hmm? Mm. No, they just didn't want to know. It wasn't their faults, because communications, you hadn't got the radio, you hadn't got anything like that. The newspapers talked the most awful ballyhoo that you could possibly imagine. I mean, It was tripe which came from them, because none of the reporters were allowed near the line, you know. They were all back miles behind, and they only sent back what they thought the people would like to know. Now, I even now remember, we said, people said, "Oh, aren't you terrified to go back?" I said, "Of course I'm terrified, but I want to get back. I want to get back amongst our blokes." Yeah. Oh, we're none of us heroes, you know. I mean, we didn't like this business of being killed at all.
Did you have any have an opinion about the way that the government was running the war?
None whatsoever. None whatsoever. Except that we knew that the responsible people out there just couldn't stand the politicians. They always called these deputations who came out and said they'd been to the front. They called them the wild men. And of course, it was great fun if you could get anyone anywhere near the line, you see, because you just stuffed the breeze up as hard as you could. but no, apart from that, I don't know, and it's only hearsay.
Were you confident of victory?
Yes, not the slightest doubt at all. And we, at that time, of course, I know it's all wrong, completely wrong now, but we thought, well, we're not nearly as efficient as the Germans. We knew that. I mean, we knew they got all, their trenches were so much better than ours. But we were brought up so that one Englishman was worth 10 Germans, and that's what kept the war going. I know it's a stupid thing to think of now, but it did happen, that.
So did you ever feel that Germany might win?
No, never, not for a moment. Not in the worst time of the whole lot did we think.
And you didn't reach the stage where you felt you didn't care who won?
No. It's not heroics, that. It's fact.
Did you hear any rumours that the armistice was coming?
No. No, none whatsoever. I know. I was on leave at the time. I go on the way to India, and we just crossed over to Cherbourg on the night of the 10th of November 1918. It might have been a day or two before, I can't remember, but at any rate, on the 10th of November we were at Cherbourg, and on the morning of the 11th we started out by troop train to go to Taranto, that's southern Italy. And it was only when we got on that journey that we heard a thing. And actually, when we arrived at Lyon, they were getting the flags out there, and it was just before 11 o'clock in the morning. Yes, I think I must be right there. We must have done that journey in that time. I suppose so. At any rate, we arrived at Lyon just before 11 in the morning, and they were getting the flags out and decorating the station, and all this troop train of ours, we were all going to India, and I went into the town, and they said the train was going to leave in 2 hours, and lots of fellows lost their train, I don't mind telling you. Another thing is that I'm afraid we were very naughty boys. We pinched quite a lot of this bunting from the station and decorated our carriages. We went. We arrived in Italy. Which was it? The Saint Plombier. I forget which it was. At Meudon. We left France and got to Turin the following morning, and we were all full of joy over this armistice business, because it was new to us, but apparently the Italians had their armistice about a week before, so it went as flat as mud, all that. No, that was my armistice, but I'm told by the chaps who were in the line that it was one of the flattest moments of their life. They just couldn't comprehend it, and they didn't know what was happening, and there was nothing joy. It wasn't like London, they all got drunk, of course. No, it wasn't out there. It was, all very quiet. You were so dazed you just didn't realise the war, that you could stand up straight and not be shot.
Did you feel any, perhaps not different in yourself, but did you feel that your career in the army or that other people regarded you differently because you had been awarded the Victoria Cross?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think it... I hope it didn't make any difference to me. It's a difficult question, that. Some people, of course, thought that because they'd been awarded that decoration that they should be kept for life. I think I kept my head enough to know that that was a stupid idea, and that when one came back to the world of commerce, that it was competitive and it didn't matter a damn who you were, what you'd got to make your way. But there are, I can think of two fellows who not really made the grade. They thought they were going to be kept, and I'm afraid they're both not in the position they thought they would be.
In the post-war years, did you feel that the hardship and the sacrifices that everybody had made during the First World War, so many people had made, had been worthwhile?
Oh, yes. Well, we felt it was worthwhile, but we did feel that, well, speaking absolutely personally, I was horrified by what I saw when I came back here, and that when one tried to get a job or anything of that sort, it was a most difficult thing. You were met straight away by the fact three or four people I got introductions, and they all had the opening gambit. They said, well, of course you realise you're of no commercial value. You got that every time, you see. That meant to say that you're going to be offered 150 a year instead of 250 or whatever it was. And these people had made millions. No, but I don't want to talk about this.
Hein, thank you.